All right, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to your Jefferson County Commissioners Court meeting for Tuesday, October 25th, 2022. As always, we'll begin our meeting with an invocation led by Commissioner Bush today, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance led by Commissioner Senegal, if you feel led to rise.
Please bow with me. Lord, we come to you today. We ask for your guidance as we make decisions that affect the citizens of our county. Lord, we also pray for all the employees and citizens of Jefferson County, and just pray that you be with them, guide them, and protect them, Lord. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Please join me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. We will begin our agenda today with items under purchasing. Item A is consider and approve, execute, receive, and file a renewal for a lease of the Jefferson County Downtown Jail for a second one-year renewal with LaSalle Corrections from December 12, 2022 to December 11, 2023. Item B is to execute, receive, and file a change order number 2 for contract for professional engineering services for Taylor's Bow drainage improvements under the Community Development Block Grant Disaster Recovery Program with Dan and Bond Engineering for additional engineering design services to design specifications for the removal of a shared use path and other items requested by TxDOT. The change order will increase the contract amount by $138,445.76, bringing the total contract amount from $506,167.73 up to $644,613.49. Funding for the amount of this change order will be through a 50-50 split of the cost between the county and Drainage District Number 6, with funding also being provided from the Texas General Land Office pursuant to Chapter 262 of the Texas Local Government Code, the County Purchasing Act, and 2 Code of Federal Regulations, Sections 200.318 through 326. Item C is to consider and approve, execute, receive, and file contract amendment number 6 for master services agreement for professional services with Garber LLC for construction administration and closeout services for the rehabilitation and realignment of taxiway A at the Jack Brooks Regional Airport for a lump sum amount of $247,900. In accordance with the request for qualifications for professional engineering services for Jack Brooks Regional Airport pursuant to Chapter 262 of the Texas Local Government Code, the County Purchasing Act, and 2 Code of Federal Regulations, Sections 200.318 through 326. That project's 90% funded by the AIP grants numbers 39 and 40. Item D is to consider and approve, execute, receive, and file professional services agreement for construction materials testing services to meet FAA requirements for taxiway A rehabilitation project at the airport for an estimated total cost of $75,150 pursuant to Chapter 262 of the Texas Local Government Code, the County Purchasing Act, and 2 Code of Federal Regulations, Sections 200.318 through 326. And that project is 90% funded by AIP grants 39 and 40. Item E is to consider and approve, execute, receive, and file an agreement with LexisNexis for an online access subscription for County Court at Law Number 1 for a one-year term beginning November 1st, 2023 at a cost of $84 per month. And item F will be slightly changed is to just consider and approve a letter of authorization with Harris Recording Solutions, Almenton Recorder, or HRS, for the extract of court data for Jefferson County in the amount of $4,500. This is additional court document data downloaded into the Tyler Technology system from the original letter of agreement approved on March 29, 2022. Do I have a motion on those items under purchasing?
So moved. Second.
Been moved by Commissioner Pierce, seconded by Commissioner Alford. Discussion.
On that last one, Judge, let's make sure you got some good understanding
on it.
This is a major change in
this. Mr. Ross? I guess you can hear me, Mr. Ross. Can you come in?
Can you
you know that? You know?
Yeah, Ed, go ahead.
We did a letter of agreement previously for them to download the court documents into Tyler. They ran into additional cost, additional time of the engineer to download documents. And this is in addition to what we passed previously on March 29th. It's an additional cost.
Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. Under County Auditor, item A is consider and approve a fiscal year 2022 budget amendment for the county morgue for additional costs for contract payment to the amount of $35,000. Item B is consider and approve fiscal year 2022 budget amendment for the 279th District Court for additional costs for juvenile indigent defense in the amount of $20,000. Item C is to consider an approval of fiscal year 2022 budget transfer for the jail for rental of air conditioning units in the amount of $11,450. Item D is to consider and approve expenditure by the county clerk in accordance with the order pursuant to section 130.908 of the Texas Local Government Code for purchases and personnel costs needed for the November 8, 2022 election. Item E is consider and approve expenditure by the district attorney in accordance with 130.908 of the Local Government Code for purchase of yearly printer maintenance contract with Function 4 in the amount of $8,982.58. Item F is to receive and file the certified roll jurisdiction summary resolution for the tax roll for tax year 2022 for Jefferson County. And items G through I are to receive and file public defender contracts for the Criminal District Court and the 252nd District Court with Marsha Norman, Mike Van Zandt, and Brittany Holmes. Item J is to receive and file a revised interlocal agreement with Jefferson County Drainage District Number 6 for the Drainage Ditch 110B project. Item K is to receive and file financial and operating statements for county funds only for the month ending September 30th, 2022. Item L is to consider and approve expenditure by the Road and Bridge Precinct 2 in accordance with an order pursuant to Section 130.908 of the Texas Local Government Code for the purchase of batteries and diesel fuel. And item M is regular county bills, check numbers 500. I guess that should be 500100.
Yeah, you got an extra zero.
Through 500313. Do we have a motion on those items under auditor? Moved by Commissioner Bush, second by Commissioner Senegal. Any discussion?
Yes, Judge. Ms. Lister, would you explain agenda item E?
On E?
E.
That's district attorney.
I apologize. D. Which one is it? D. I apologize.
Okay. On these, because these are most of these elected officials are in the lame duck category, so are appointed officials. This one, we left it open. We knew that when we do the election, we're probably going to spend more than 1/12 of the budget. So how our resolution is, if you're a lame duck, you allowed to spend, basically 1/12 of that month's budget. Anytime you go over that, we bring it to court for that exception to be approved. This protects the incoming elected official that their budgets will not be all spent. In this situation, the county clerk will have an election in November, and so you're going to spend most of the election budget in November. Does that make sense?
It was probably about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
What happened in Bell County is that they had an election, and between the new budget year and the end of December, the outgoing elected official spent the entire year's budget on some things and there was no money left for the new newly elected official.
But we had a similar problem here where.
Somebody's travel.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's why it's in the statutes.
That hasn't happened since I've been on the court, though.
We've been doing this program where we bring it to court, but we'll watch.
Okay, any other discussion?
I do have one question. Patrick, on item A at $35,000, is that come out of building maintenance here in the courthouse going to the county morgue?
Yeah, so that's last year's, last fiscal year, and now that the year's over with. This is us transferring money in all possible areas we can find to cover those expenses that are exceeding that are still charged back to last year. So, yes.
Oh, this is charged back to last year?
Yeah. These are all FY22.
This year's budget.
Yeah. So when the invoices come in after September, we're taking money that.
Gotcha. So this 30, if he carried that over to this year's budget, it's still there?
Yeah, it's still there.
Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. Under County Airport, we have one item to consider possibly approving authorized county judge to execute a lease amendment between Jefferson County and Coosa Aviation that adds Hangar 7, Unit 3 to their lease agreement. Do I have a motion on that item?
So
moved. Second. By Commissioner Senegal, seconded by
Pierce.
Commissioner Pierce. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. Under County Commissioners, item A is consider and approve County Judge to sign a letter of reevaluation relating to the environmental clearance on the Taylor's Bio 124 Bridge project funded by the Harvey CDBG DR grant Texas General Land Office. Do I have a motion on that item?
So moved. Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
No discussion, but you're saying a reevaluation, meaning that. Yeah. From the TxDOT standpoint.
Yes, Vivian's here. She could speak to it more, but I think it's just because of the way we've changed some of the original plans.
Okay.
Going forward, now we finally have this land in place.
Okay.
Of how to design the bridge. So they just want it all cleared before we go to the letting.
It's basically okay to new plan, right?
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. Under tax office, we have one item to consider and approve property tax refund to Beaumont Hotel LLC in the amount of $7,536.53 in accordance with property tax code 31.11. Do I have a motion on that item?
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. Under County Treasurer, we have several items. Item A is considering and possibly authorize County Treasurer to execute a release of excess collateral funds with Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., through the Bank of New York Mellon for the funds of Jefferson County. Item B is considering and approve a wire for $66 to cover safekeeping fees from Wells Fargo Securities for the month of September 2022. Item C is to receive and file investment schedule for September 2022, including the year-to-date total earnings on county funds. Item D is consider and approve a quarterly report wire for state pooled fees in the amount of $582,879.38. Do I have a motion on those items under? Been moved. Second. By Commissioner Senegal?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Alford. Any discussion?
Yes, Judge, I'd like to point out something right quick is we made $284,508.72 in the month of September, which is right after a $294,000 month in August. So we ended up making over $1 million for the fiscal year, which is the third time in 4 years that we have made over $1 million. The 1 year we didn't was a year, obviously, when we were dealing with COVID. And, per the Public Funds Investment Act, it says safety and liquidity are paramount to anything else. And I can't really think of any other time during COVID when we needed to be safe and we needed to be liquid. And so, but when we, once we got our sea legs back underneath us after COVID, I mean, we're doing good. And what's good is that for the next several months, it's going to be really good. So get ready. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hallmore. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. Under Engineering Department, we have several items. Item A is to execute, receive, and file a pipeline permit and road use agreement between Jefferson County and Mobile Pipeline Company for the purpose of constructing, maintaining, or repairing a pipeline for distribution in Jefferson County located in Precincts 1 and 4. Item B has been requested tabled to look at the documents a little bit more closely. Item C is to execute, receive, and file an overweight vehicle permit and road use agreement between Jefferson County and Kinder Morgan Texas Pipeline LLC to haul in equipment and material to perform a hydro reassessment with water. Item D is consider and possibly approve a final plat of Highland Village Phase 1B, Block 1, Lots 1 through 12, Block 2, Lots 1 through 26, and Block 4, Lots 1 through 9, being a 12.249-acre subdivision out of 385.53-acre tract. In the Alexander Horton Survey, A-20, Jefferson County, Texas, located off FM 365 in Precinct Number 1. In addition, the subdivision is partially located in the City of Nome city limits and the City of Nome ETJ, the final plat having met all of the county and City of Nome requirements. Do I have a motion on items A, C, and D?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Pierce, seconded by Commissioner Senegal. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. And under Public Health, we have one item to consider, possibly approve an authorized county judge to execute an affiliation agreement between Lamar University and Jefferson County Public Health Department for nursing and health education student collaboration. Do I have a motion on that item?
So moved.
Moved by Commissioner Alford, seconded by Commissioner Bush. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it unanimously. That completes our regular agenda. I'm going to invite some ladies up from Austin with the Texas Essential Healthcare Partnerships. If y'all would like to come up, I had received a call on, I believe it was on Saturday, before, after we had an opportunity to put a workshop on, but I'm inviting them to talk because they have a somewhat of a deadline, I understand. Do you have some handouts for the commissioners with your contact information?
I sure do, Judge.
Could you bring those forward, please? And just
thank you.
I thank you. Invited them here to speak before I have a complete understanding of the program, although it apparently functioned somewhat like the upper payment limit program without the county having to make a financial contribution. There's apparently a healthcare provider in Port Arthur that has requested inclusion in this LPPF program and allows local funding to be leveraged to increase the federal reimbursements under Medicaid. So I'm just going to turn it over to you and allow you to explain the program.
Absolutely.
Robin.
Thank you, Judge, and Commissioners, for having us here today. My name is Robin Daniel, and this is Melanie McCann. She's on our legal team. We both work for Adelanto Healthcare Ventures.
Excuse me.
Is that turned on?
Yeah, pull the microphone down a little bit.
Is this better?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'll start over. Thank you, everyone, for having us here today. I am Robin Daniel. This is Melanie McCammon. She's on our legal team. And then I am a director of our finance and policy teams at AHCV, or Adelanto Healthcare Ventures. And we work with, you mentioned, Judge, the Texas Essential Healthcare Partnership. That is a nonprofit here in Texas that supports hospitals with advocacy just across the state. And so we work with them on a lot of things. But we specifically represent several hospitals within your community, specifically Christus, St. Elizabeth, Baptist, and the Medical Center of Southeast Texas. So what we do for them, we help them access federal funding that is available. And that federal funding is meant to help reimburse their cost of treating uninsured and underinsured patients within your community. because when patients that are either on Medicaid or do not have insurance present to these hospitals, the hospitals don't turn them away. You know, they treat everybody with that same level of care, regardless of their ability to pay. And so we help these hospitals to access that funding. We're here today on their behalf to request that Jefferson County consider implementing a LPPF. It's one of those many acronyms from Austin, but that stands for a Local Provider Participation Fund. So what does that mean? It is merely an account that is held at the government entity level, so at the county, that the hospitals that are requesting this, just the hospitals, pay into. And then those funds are then used to draw down a federal matching share in those payments. So this program is really a win-win for everybody. It's a win for the hospitals because it reimburses them for the cost that they're eating. It allows them to continue providing this care to everyone in the community. Allows them to put funding towards implementing new technology and hiring in skilled professionals. And so it keeps your hospitals financially stable. It helps the community continue having that quality of care that they have had for years. And then it's also a win for you guys. This is funding that is already available for these hospitals. It does not cost your taxpayers a penny. It is just the hospitals paying into this funds. It is their money that they want to use to draw down additional dollars. In addition, so that's a win-win there, and you've got to be thinking, what's the catch here? But I am telling you that it really is a win-win for your community. There are no costs to the county. And in addition to that, to the extent that there's any administrative burden, the county is also able, under the statute, to assess an administrative fee on that LPPF account. So it is truly a win-win for everybody. There has been a LPPF administered by the city of Beaumont since 2015. And out of that program, that has really included everybody, all of the hospitals except for Medical Center of Southeast Texas, that program has helped draw down over $500 million into this region since 2015. Now, within Jefferson County, you guys, about 42% of your population is either uninsured or on Medicaid. So that's 42% of patients that are going to these hospitals. And so this funding is critical to their sustainability. So the reason we're asking to move the LPPF from Beaumont to the county is because the need has now exceeded the capabilities of the Beaumont LPPF. And so they're needing to bring in an additional hospital to be able to participate in the program.
So are you saying that Beaumont can only include hospitals within their corporate jurisdiction?
That's correct.
Okay, so if the county administers it, all hospitals in the county can participate.
Correct.
And you already said it wouldn't cost the local taxpayers or a dime, would not require the county to obligate any of its general fund to the operation of this program, correct?
Correct. And now I want to clarify, this is in addition to the UPL program that you guys are already
That's
running.
What I was about to say, because we spend right at $3.6 million right now. That we need to make sure we verify some things on Patrick before we even talk about moving.
Absolutely, and that is essential. The hospitals do not want those dollars to be impacted. There is no legal reason that those would be impacted. It is a separate program. It is not meant to replace.
How would this benefit us if we could get some of that money in Congress that sit there that the state doesn't get? How would that benefit us also?
Which funds are you talking about?
When we start talking about Medicare.
Medicare and Medicaid funds that are sitting. So those dollars are at the federal level.
Right.
Because we did not expand Medicaid in Texas.
Correct.
The state has to put up a state share or the non-federal share in order to draw down those payments. So these are those funds.
Okay.
Yes. We all just right. need the hospitals need an ability to access.
I see what you're saying.
And they're matched by the state?
They're matched by, so they're all pulled together by the state, and then the state uses the total funds to draw down money from the federal government, their federal payments.
Gotcha. They're basically using the money from.
Also, my understanding is this requires a public hearing and regarding the authorization and creation of the local provider participation program, as well as the creation of a bank account and some related documents that need to be done. My understanding is that y'all provide all this to the county attorney.
Yeah, so on behalf of our client hospitals, I did, within that handout, the second page is kind of a roadmap for what action items need to be taken to get this account up and running. A public hearing is required so that hospitals can come and show their support. They're happy to do that. The city of Beaumont was also happy to show up and provide any support. But our team, for any of the templates that are needed, we're happy to provide you with templates that you guys can use to lessen any administrative burden. Our team is also happy to meet with whoever, I believe it's Fran Lee has been working with the UPL program, so our team's happy to meet with them and walk everybody through any questions.
I just provided the county auditor a copy of your documents, and I guess the best way to proceed, since you are on some kind of timeline.
We are on a timeline. This need has arisen because there is a new program available, and a lot of funds are available for both, or really all three of these hospitals, more funds than were available in the past. And a rate has to be set for either, if Jefferson County is able to implement an LPPF, a rate would need to be set here or in Beaumont before mid-November so that they can draw down. There's a funding cycle that will take place, and so funds are needed.
Okay, so we would need to have the public hearing next Tuesday then.
We would need to visit with Beaumont, too, before we start.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously this is a first step, and yeah. So, which is, you've given the handout to each of the commissioners with your phone numbers and contact information so that they can call you this week. I've given it to the county auditor. We'll need another copy with the county attorney. And then the commissioners can communicate with you this week on any questions or concerns they have and have the opportunity to speak to the city of Beaumont. Do you see any downside other than the administrative burden to the county?
There truly is none. It does not impact your local constituents, and it brings federal dollars. I mean, we all pay our taxes into the federal government. We all pay Medicaid and Medicare. Those dollars are out there. It's a matter of, do we want to be able to access them or not? So it's funding that is available and supports your local hospitals. And the hospitals in the area are the ones requesting this.
Let me make sure that I'm hearing everything. Mm-hmm. You said Beaumont can only provide services to, I guess, assume the two hospitals in Beaumont. We would be able to incorporate the hospital over in Port Arthur, in Mid County, Port Arthur, correct? And
yes.
Krista's over there, right?
That's exactly correct.
Okay. So the city of Port Arthur did not have a LPPF in its past history, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, their funding for these programs, they haven't had as much need in the past until now, but any funding that they did need was covered by the UPL dollars as well as by the LPPF in Beaumont.
So all of them were paying UPL dollars is what I'm hearing.
Yes. Well, yes, they were all benefiting from the county's UPL funds. Yes.
Okay. We do need to meet, Judge. With all of them plus before we move.
Y'all can hang around a little bit after court, and that way if individual commissioners want to speak to you, y'all can explain the program to them. They have offices here in the courthouse, and I'm certain that they'll make time to visit with you on this issue. But we appreciate you being here today, and make sure that the county attorney gets a copy of this
information?
I think there's a...
Okay, very good.
I left a couple of cards up there, but I have some more if you'd like them. We can stick around as long as you would like. We're not in a hurry for that 4.5 hour.
One last question, though.
Yes, sir.
I didn't see what bill this was created under. Is it recent? Very recent, because I didn't see anything in the literature about the bill that come out to create it.
Yes, this was Chapter 300 that was added into the Texas Health and Safety Code.
Okay.
That's what authorized this local jurisdiction. Just for City of Beaumont contacts, we've worked with several people at the city, but specifically Todd Simono and then Christine Orchid. They've been really fundamental. And so I've spoken to them about this transition as well, and they have said they would help you guys with whatever you needed.
Todd and Christine?
Yes.
Okay.
But we'll hang around. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Daniel.
Todd is your CFO.
Yeah, I know.
Anything else, Mr. Swain?
I didn't know any other counties were...
Well, that...
It said
28, and we didn't see what size counties are. The number. It's a few other questions that we need to ask on that. Okay.
Absolutely. What was that question again? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the beginning.
The question is, what other county? You say 28 counties. I guess something more comparable to our size. Who we could reach out to.
Absolutely.
City and county.
Absolutely. So I'll just list off, obviously the big cities all have one. So San Antonio, Houston, Dallas, Tarrant, El Paso, Austin. But there's also just around, I'd say closer to here, you've got, so Angelina County, that's Lufkin.
Okay.
Greg, and I can put you into contact with those administrators. They're wonderful, wonderful people. So Gregg County, Grayson County, Brazos, McLennan, Lubbock has one as well, Amarillo.
Okay. Yeah, that'll work.
I can keep them going if
we'll visit.
If you run short.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Anything else?
That was it.
Okay. Thank y'all.
Yeah, thank you, Benny. All right. That completes our regular agenda. Commissioners, y'all have anything you wish to bring to the attention of the public without our taking action? And now is a time of public comment. If there's anybody online, they'll need to press *6. We have public comment relating to items that are on the agenda under our rules of decorum. All right.
You said public
hearing
comment?
Hearing nothing.
Public comment. I got a public request right here.
But she had a public request, and it was not related to an agenda item, which is part of our rules of decorum. However, Commissioner, you may invite her to speak.
Callan, come on up to the podium. Then.
Thank you, Commissioner and Judge.
What is this in reference to, Ms.
This is in reference to our elections that's going on at this particular time.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. First of all, let me make a disclaimer, Judge Brannick. I don't think that you knew you were informed about any of this until I sent the email. I did send an email to all the commissioners' court, Judge Brannick, the party chairs for the Democrat and Republican Party. Last week, when the verification committee met out at the counting station, and I think what the problem is that we have two election workers that's, like, I'm gonna say, gone wild. But the problem is, last week at the counting station, when the verification committee met, we had an employee, and from what I understand, her name is Donna Gabish, that brought in Jeff Brannick political signs into the counting station. The other problem is, we have a presiding judge out there, which is Stephanie Fragaro, and it's her responsibility as presiding judge to make sure that we are in compliance with the election code and electioneering as well. I find fault with both of those election workers that they allowed these signs to be in the place and nothing was done about it, brought to the attention, of Ms. Leister. I think that they should no longer be allowed to work this election, and they should be removed from their posts for this election. That's my first issue. My second issue is that we've been, I've had poll watchers in the field, and that at some of the locations, one of the locations in particular, when a voter bring in their ballot that was mailed to them, they are not allowed to vote a regular ballot. They are being made to vote a provisional ballot, and that is not in compliance with the election code. They should be allowed to vote a regular ballot if they are returning that ballot and have that ballot in hand. And we went through this in the primary, and I just don't understand why we're having to go through this again in this general election. Got a couple more things. Please bear with me. We had a driver. I think part of the problem is that we have a lot of new election workers. A lot of our old election workers have been replaced for one reason or another. I'm not sure why. But we do have a lot of new election workers, and they're not familiar, I guess, with the processes. And I'm sure they've gotten some training, but obviously not enough training. We had another voter that went in, and his driver's license did not match the voter registration. One had Thomas, the other one had Tom. Well, he was told, you need to fill out a new voter registration card. That's not necessarily so. That's why there is an affidavit of similar name that he could have filled out to say, this is me. But instead, they turned the voter away. And we should not be turning our voters away. That's disenfranchising our voters. The other thing I got a text since I've been here is that we've had two people to walk out with their ballots in their hands. And I want to know, what is the process to resolve that if they go back to the polling location with that ballot? So we need to find out what would that process be. One other issue that I take with is that we have one of our longtime poll workers in Port Arthur, Ms. Azza Mills, that was not allowed to work early voting because she needed to take off one day for a doctor's appointment in Houston. That has never happened in the past. So these are some issues I have. Like I said, my main concern is I think that those election workers should be removed for this election because they are definitely out of compliance with the Texas Election Code, and that we need to make sure that all of our election workers in the field are better equipped to know what the laws are, especially when they come to all their forms and the do's and the don'ts, because our voters are being disenfranchised at this time. So that's all I have. I appreciate you all allowing me to speak. Thank you very much.
Sir, may I respond?
Please.
May I respond?
Yes. Oh, yes.
First of all, as with regard to the signs that were left at the election barn, that was taken care of within maybe 5 minutes that we were notified of that situation that happened. It was a worker there in the signature verification committee had those signs delivered to her by someone else that was not on the committee. Our staff was horrified when they realized that it happened. The person had just dropped him in the front door. I received a text about it with a photo. I immediately called the chairman of the signature verification committee and told her that the worker who was to be the recipient of those signs needed to be removed immediately, that we cannot have election material on the site of government property, especially during that. It was a total ridiculous misunderstanding, but it was costly because they lost a good member of the signature verification committee. But that needed to be done. There's no doubt about it. It was just a unfortunate situation that needed to be resolved immediately and in that manner. And I'm glad that that happened, and everybody was very supportive of it. The Republican Party sent a representative to the barn, to the election barn, and apologized to every member of that committee and explained to them that it was nothing done on purpose. It was just an unfortunate accident or misunderstanding. As far as the mail ballots go, there is statute that if a voter appears at a polling location with their mail ballot in hand, they surrender the mail ballot and vote a standard ballot. If the voter comes to the polling location and does not have their mail ballot, they don't know what happened to it, they have not received it, they vote a provisional ballot. That is the law, and that is what is happening at the polling locations. I have heard of no one coming and not being able to vote a standard ballot, having surrendered their mail ballot. This is the procedure that we did this spring, and this is the procedure that we are doing now and will do through Election Day. As with regard to Azzie Mills,
can we take them one at a time? Ms. Gibbs, do you have the voters that were affected by this? And I'm not saying you, maybe the judge didn't relay that message to you.
Yeah, I can tell you it happened to John Paul Davis, and I was called by one of the election workers over there, Catherine Camp.
Oh, well, I've not heard that at all, and I assure you that the people there who attended our training were trained to know the difference between that, because we have emphasized that, and that has been in place this spring as well. Right. There's no doubt about that.
I understand that, but I'm just saying we got people in the field that...
Well, she did not call me. No one from that called me.
I don't know if she's your liaison or not. I don't know who.
No, she's not. But okay. She has other clerks call me all the time. Right. So,
and I'm asking, right. And I'm asking Ms. Lisa that everything be documented through signature, and at that moment, it needs to be verified through email, signature. Or the voter needs to write that statement saying that they were rejected,
exactly.
Or not rejected, but. Forced to vote provision of with the, and that's a simple fix. That's what I'm asking. Okay.
All right. And then with regard to Azzie Mills, Azzie has been a longtime excellent judge and lead deputy early voting clerk. And I was told that she had to have knee surgery and was not going to be able to serve. And I was told that around Thursday or Friday of last week, and it was with great disappointment. She certainly was never told by anyone in our office that if she had to miss a day, that she could not work at all. That is, I've never heard that, and we had to rush around and try to find a replacement for her, which we did at the very last minute. But and it's our understanding that she's going to work Election Day, but that she had to withdraw from her polling location for the early vote. So if she is going to come back, I would love to have that. And but that's not what was told to me at all.
She is available. I spoke with her this morning, and the fact that she could work Election Day tells you she's not having knee surgery right now.
Well, I was told that that's why she had withdrawn. So I would like have her call me. Mm. The little other thing with regard to people who vote and leave with their ballot and come back the next day. We've had two incidents of that today. Those are known as fleeing voters. They happened with the old election equipment, and they're happening now. It's unfortunate, and I suppose now they know that they've left with their ballot because they then look and realize that they left with their ballot. Before, if they didn't push the button that said cast your vote, they didn't know that they had not voted. So it's been a problem always. And unfortunately, when people leave the polling location with their ballot in their hand, they cannot come back in and submit that ballot. It's unfortunate, but that is just the way the law is written. So I don't know any of the other issues that she brought up.
Slow down on that one. If they leave out of there and have accidentally taking the ballot out, so their vote is not counted.
That's correct.
Shouldn't the people that's working that in there, shouldn't they be the ones to catch that?
And they have. They have caught a number of them at every polling location, and they've tried to, but it's like a fleeing voter that we had with the old equipment, and the poll worker would realize it when the machine was not closed out, because once you hit cast vote, the machine used to reset. And so it is always a problem, but we have people, we've instructed the polling locations to have people near the door to remind people that they need to put their ballot into the scanner. And, you know, some people listen, some people don't. and it's unfortunate. But right now we know of two people.
This is my first time ever hearing this, that incident.
Fleeing voters? Yeah. It's a common problem.
If I may, we always had, fleeing voters, and that's because we could not cast a ballot for them. We were not allowed to complete that vote for them inside the polling location. Mm-hmm. But my question is, now that we've gone to a paper ballot, and they have that ballot in their hand, and it is their ballot, what is the process? And I hear what she's saying, so you're saying even though they have that ballot, they're still not allowed to scan that ballot to make their votes count.
Well, that they're coming back the day after, so we don't know. I mean, it's, and the law is very clear on this. Fleeing voter and this voter, it's unfortunate, but that's the way the law is written. It's a fleeing voter.
When you get a count of everybody that registers in that location, and you get a count of every vote cast, so you see a difference? Is that how you're catching?
Yes.
So there's no way to verify that their ballot has not been tampered with? I mean, I don't know the process, because this is the first election that we're on the paper ballots, and I do understand that. But certainly there should be a process in place if that voter has their ballot in hand, that ballot can still be scanned or verified.
But we won't have any way to know when that ballot's real or not real.
But if you are programmed for an election, either it's going to accept it or it's going to reject it. If it's not the programming, it's not going to accept that ballot.
The voter has left the polling location and has already entered in as having been an accepted voter. Right. And so there's no personal identification on the ballot at all. So if once the ballot is dropped in the scanner and cast, it has no personal identification on it. So there's no way to really know when that voter comes back, if their vote was really cast or not. You check a voter in, and they're listed as a voting in the polling location, and it's just you assume that they dropped their ballot in, but there's no way to know if they did or not.
But
if they come back in with a, we could all go back in with an extra ballot and say,
where,
oh, I guess I ran away.
Where are we going to get extra ballots from, Laurie? So, that does not even make sense. Well, where will we get ballots from to come in with an extra ballot? I just think we need to look at the process, and the process needs to change.
I think
it only matter in a recount if they push the button and it's counted as they vote. Would that only matter in a recount?
No. It's a fleeing voter. The number is off at the end of the day, and you count the physical paper ballots that are there. It wouldn't matter. You wouldn't count that against. That the adjustment is made ahead of time, but it's statute. So if there's an issue, that's worth looking into, there's nothing we can do about it.
Like Commissioner Pierce said, we don't know what it is until the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, we know if we had 55 or 300 runaway ballots.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Well, we would know if we had one off, and we have an idea that that would be a fleeing voter.
Okay. And do y'all keep those numbers?
Of course we do.
Okay. Like I said, I never heard of them, but it's interesting to find out those numbers.
Is there anybody else online? Ma'am, did you want to talk to an agenda item? I'm sorry, I can't hear you, ma'am. It doesn't matter whether you filled out a form. If you're speaking to an item on the agenda, you're welcome to come up to the front and speak to it. Can you tell us which agenda item?
It's under the county auditor, G, H, and I is the first one that I have.
G, H, and I?
Right. Contract agreement for criminal district court attorney contracts.
Yes, ma'am.
And just for a point of information, and I don't know if there's been a study on it, whether there could be attorneys to alleviate the docket and be county attorneys. So that was a question that I had, versus continuous contract attorneys if they're not employees of the county. And there are counties that have that. So just wanting to know if Jefferson County had ever considered that.
Yeah, there are counties that have public defenders offices. And I think that the auditor and the district attorney and others have all looked at that issue. And I think they found that the savings from contracting directly with public defenders was pretty significant as opposed to the creation of an entirely new office. But you're welcome to talk to Mr. Swain, the county auditor, after the meeting's over if you'd like.
Okay.
And
okay. Thank you. I have four things. One is I see that Mobile Oil are set for maybe the approval of a pipeline permit, and that's under county auditor. And I live in the West End in Amelia. Is there anything in those contracts for maintenance? Because I notice in driving around in our area, we have the pipeline warnings, but they're on the ground. So is that a problem? You know, if it's continuous, and I think it's maintenance, people mowing the grass. So as citizens, we're supposed to be aware of the warning, but they should be as well. I don't know if when they're on the ground, they're going to leak or what have you. So
The warnings are not connected directly to the pipeline. They're just T-posts that are put up with the warning pipelines to warn those individuals who might be considering digging in the area. Okay. We also have a 811 system in Texas where you can call to make sure you locate lines in advance of any kind of excavation activities. And in addition, I think our contracts do say something about maintenance, but State Railroad Commission regulations require that they maintain that signage for the general public. Okay. So that is an obligation that they have under state law, separate and distinct from the contract.
Okay, and I have called them. And my last is, I notice on the county clerk addendum A, just wanting to know about equality, or does it matter? Because I saw something that looked partisan to me. And I know that our government is supposed to be nonpartisan. And it says that appointment...
Ma'am, could I interrupt you? Can you tell me what... I don't see county clerk on...
county clerk addendum A. And it talks about appointment of supplemental presiding and alternate election judges for November 8th.
That's last week's agenda.
Oh, okay. So I'm behind. I wasn't here. Okay, so you can't speak to old stuff.
But I'm sure the county clerk would be more than happy to talk to you about that.
Okay. Thank you so much for listening to me, Judge.
Thank you, ma'am.
And as far as voting, when would I have time to speak about an issue that I've confronted? Is that at the end? And it's a matter of
voting when you went out to vote?
Yes, and it was related to I get mail ballots, but
okay.
Submitting after you get to the poll, you decide that you don't want the mail ballot, you want to submit it.
Okay.
And what has happened to me twice.
I think you came in late. I think she addressed that issue a little bit earlier. That
I heard her explanation, but bottom line is, like, it was said earlier, training is paramount, because I've been there twice at different locations, and it was a fiasco to turn my ballot in. So, you know, I can talk to the election person about that later. Thank you.
May I speak to that, too? You can't turn in your mail ballot at a polling location. You can either surrender it or vote provisionally. When you do not have your ballot, you vote provisionally. You can't turn your, it's a mail ballot. It's designed for people who can't go to the polls. So you can't just turn it in. You have to surrender it and vote in person. Or if you don't have your ballot, you come to the polling location and you say, I don't have a ballot, and you vote provisionally because your ballot could still be in the mail and being delivered. So you vote provisionally, and then the early voting ballot board at the appropriate time, will, at the end of the election, will take a look at your provisional ballot and see if your mail ballot has come in the mail and has been returned, and then they make a determination on which one to count. You can only, you know, only one will count. So you can't turn your ballot in at a polling location.
I surrendered my ballot at the polling location. Maybe I used the wrong
ballot. Okay, well, if you surrendered your ballot at the polling location, you would have been able to vote a regular ballot.
And I was. There were people that, it took about 5 or 6 people to figure out what to do, so I'm just suggesting.
Well, they have instructions. We haven't had this problem. They it may be isolated problem, but they're instructed if someone's going to surrender their ballot to call our office. It does take a little time. There is some paperwork to fill out, but there is a procedure.
Let me ask one question, because I had a good friend while sitting in the barbershop, a little help here I have. Guy told me, and it was recently, and he said, I'm not going to get the mail ballots again. The last time the election, I think his ballot went to California somewhere, and he never received, update to where it was or whatever. So when he came in, I think he had to go provisional or whatever. I don't know if they let him vote. Is there a procedure when the ballots are mailed and they end up in the lost in the mail like that? Is there some type of procedure we have in place?
Well, if the mail is returned to us, okay. If the address has changed or something, you know, that's an unfortunate situation. If the ballot comes back and it does not have, you know, it's not been cured, uh-huh. We send out a letter. By law, we send out a reason for the rejection letter.
Okay.
But when we mail ballots out, you know, as you all have heard me say over this past spring, there's so many of them that are never mailed back. Mm-hmm. And we just assume that those voters must never vote because they are on the poll as having received a ballot, because they have to request a ballot. Okay. So they're shown as having an application for a mail ballot. So if they come back up and they say, I never got my ballot, it was lost in the mail, they can vote provisionally. Okay. Everybody who comes to the polling locations can vote. It's just everybody can cast a vote. There are certain forms of identification, you vote a standard ballot. Other forms, if you don't have it, you vote provisionally, and all that is taken care of after the election.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone else online that wishes to make public comment with respect to an agenda item? If you're online or on the telephone, you need to press *6 to unmute your line. Okay, hearing nothing, I thank you also very much for being here today, and we are adjourned. A reminder that